I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk about tech stuff. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. This is a tech cruise for you if you want to keep in touch with what's going on, with what's coming, or you just like this stuff. This is for you. We have an editor from CNET. They do all kinds, very popular site online, and we have also Rich Hanley of Quinnipiac University, who's one of our go-to media guys. We have Chris Brosberry of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, who happens to be trained as an engineer. And Chris is all about tech stuff for fun. He builds computers. So this is why he is on the show. Scott Stein is senior editor at CNET. They cover all kinds of things, laptop reviews, mobile computing, video games, tech culture in general. Scott, glad to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks.
So here's a first question. There is this ability, I understand, to port phone numbers. And by that, don't run away just yet, because you know how you have that thing where you call the phone company, you pay a bunch of money to make sure that your phone numbers get, you know, transferred over to another thing because you moved, or there's this ability now to port phone numbers for a one-time fee. Chris, tell us about this.
And I did it for a home number. So basically, you just go through your Google Voice account. So you have to have a Google Voice account, and it's a one-time fee of $20.
So you go to Google, set this up.
So you set this up, and you can actually take any number that you have in your possession now and make it a Google Voice number.
$20 per number?
$20 per number. So it's a one-time fee, and then that number can be used on any device you have through different apps and different ways of using it. And basically, it makes that number portable, and you can take that wherever you go.
So if you're someone with lots of lines at your house, mm-hmm. and you have businesses, and you have all these numbers, and you're looking to see what's ringing and what – you can now have everything shifted to one cell phone. You have a friend who's in Europe now?
Yeah, he's in Europe right now, and all his numbers go through his Google Voice, and he's doing business just like he was in his house. He has a home-based business, and he's doing business like he's at home. So when someone calls his 413 Western Mass business line, it rings his phone wherever he is.
Okay, so that's through Google.
And that's through Google. And it's, again, you port and then you get the apps. I mean, and then there's so many different apps to manage these numbers. I use a thing called Groove IP Lite, which is a free app, which basically takes those numbers and allows you to put it on any device. It doesn't even have to be a phone. Lou and I both use our iTouch, which are just, you know, the music ones that have internet connection. And you can make that into a real phone when you're in a wireless environment.
We're going to come back to that part in just a minute, because you might be saying, really? And we're also going to tell you, thanks to Rich Hanley, about how anybody, it turns out, can buy a drone for $1,000 or less. Is that a wild? So Scott Stein, of course, everybody is talking about this. And that's the question of when Apple in June releases its new phone, what are we hearing, you know, with your ear on the ground? What are you hearing? Is it going to be bigger?
Well, yeah, I think absolutely it seems like it's going to be bigger, and it needs to be. And this is funny because I liked the smaller size of the iPhone. I really did. There was a point when I thought that these larger phones were too big. And something changed. You know, basically it went from those phones being too big to, I think, the iPhone being too small.
Mm-hmm.
And that turning point, I think, came maybe a year ago. And it was definitely when the iPhone 5S came out that it felt like it wasn't quite enough. And it might be that the iPad mini had already started to get, if you're an iOS user, you get adjusted to a smaller screen, but it's still bigger than the iPhone, and you're getting in that territory. I look around on the train, for instance, and you can see a lot of people using big screen phones, and, you know, they, especially like Samsung makes a ton of them. The Galaxy Note is a really popular line, also because of the pen. It's like a return to that PDA that you had years ago.
Makes
that comeback, and you can tuck it into a little bag, and you can only buy one device. I think that's another key. Now, I think if they make a larger screen iPhone, will that mean that the iPad mini is not as attractive? Would it be that the iPhone is more like an iPad? That's something that you sort of have to keep an eye on, maybe.
Yeah, but how, you know, how much bigger? Are they going to give you 1 inch?
Probably.
Really? I mean, that's not going to do it for me, is it?
You need the iPad, then.
Yeah, well, except here's my question. How I'm always looking at the iPad and thinking, if you would just make a phone call for me with right. you know, some kind of earpiece, I'd be so happy. So can you? Why don't they?
That's a really good question, and it's really kind of silly. I don't know if this is, you know, a limitation with the carriers and contracts, because you can get an LTE equipped, you know, with a cellular data service, obviously you get an iPad, but why can't you just make a phone call with it? I think they need to get to that point, because like you said, it's really helpful, and obviously you don't hold it to your ear, but you can put it in a headset.
Yeah.
And that would be so fantastic if you're using this as an all-in-one office device, and if they're selling this as a real, and gives it an edge over a laptop in some ways, because you say, well, I can also make phone calls on this, I'm all set. Plus with these, you know, family plans or, you know, Framily or whatever you want to call them, the connected data plans are getting more to the point where sharing a voice plan would make a lot of sense for that.
Oh, I would run so fast. I mean, obviously, Apple wants to sell phones and iPads, so I get that in terms of their commercial idea. But there's so many more people would be buying this. It would make your head spin. All the old iPad users would junk their iPads and go buy this thing.
You know, Sky, I'm wondering what Apple's objection is. Is it the form factor, just the way they can't control the experience?
On the iPad?
What is Apple's reasoning for not moving in that direction?
It's a really good question. I don't know. We have no, you know, we don't get much insight into that. But I do know that previous to this, you got the sense that the iPhone still has come from the iPod line. You know, if you look at, like, the evolutionary tree, that this has been still kind of an offshoot of that in the way the iPhone came to be as a music player. And we're still sort of seeing that. The iPad always felt like it grew out of even though it's running essentially the same app experience, feels like it grew out of a philosophy closer to laptops. And maybe that's a bit of a gap in terms of the way Apple thinks about these products, but they need to come closer together. You know, so, you know, exactly, why can't you use the iPad more like a phone? That seems logical. And I think we're at the point where they're blending so much that it really won't matter.
And I'm going to jump in and defend Apple for a minute, which is totally unlike me because nobody else is doing it either, right? It's not just Apple with their iPad not doing this. You don't have any of these devices that, like you say, have cellular already, right? So we're talking about anything in that market that has cellular already for data.
Tablet phone.
A tablet that has data already. Why aren't they making these phones? So it's not just Apple. It's Samsung. It's all of them that are making tablets.
They want to sell lots of devices.
They want to sell.
You know,
but we're different categories.
It's business.
Of sales,
I get that.
Different sales channels.
But if somebody comes out with it,
we'd all jump,
we
right?
would all – I mean, I think – listen
I would
to me.
Jump in a second because my goal is to only have one. I'm one of those people. I don't like having multiple devices and syncing them all. It would be great to have something that is just one thing.
We are seeing in the you know, the portable gadget area, the basket of remotes problem, where we're carrying around a lot of stuff. You know how you have a remote control at home for this TV, but it doesn't work in another television, Scott. So it's this basket of remotes problem we're seeing with these other portable gadgets. And do you see this convergence at some point in the near term where we're no longer carrying the so-called basket of remotes in our pockets and our bags?
I think so, but I think it's going to need to get a lot better. You know, and I've seen so many devices that offer some way to control your TV, anything from like some watches, like so in some smartwatches like Samsung's have a built-in infrared remote, which is crazy, or you have an app that controls stuff. But it needs to be really helpful and work with all products. You have so many different, you know, which streaming box did you buy or which TV brand do you have? And like it gives you some appreciation, like, you know, traditionally, like the universal remote is a universal. So, you know, we need to have that type of way that it can work with everything. And you have a lot of really, really contentious companies that don't want to all work together, you know, between your DVR and your TV and everything else, it makes you appreciate infrared.
That's right.
This is Scott Stein, senior editor at CNET. You can go to them online to see all the kinds of things that they review. You mentioned, by the way, the smart watch, where you can do all kinds of things on that watch, you know, email and all that. I look at them and I think, well, that's pretty cool, but I can't imagine myself using it, you know, actually having it be my go-to device. Is that what's happening? Is it popular?
Which one? The
smartwatch.
The smartwatch. No, I don't think it is. And I think, you know, Samsung posted recent numbers that suggested greater sales of their watches than you'd think. But, you know, this, I've been looking at wearable tech for the past year, and I've come to appreciate the fact that I don't think one person in 100 in the actual world has one. And so you have this weird thing where I'm testing a very niche area. And what you do see, though, in wearable, and this is probably why, you know, you hear talk with Apple or with Samsung about health stuff, is that you hear about people buying a fitness band.
Yeah.
You know, someone says, they don't know what to do with it, but they'll say, maybe for the holidays, like, someone got me a Fitbit, or I'm thinking about getting a Fuel band. And I feel like that's the area, for whatever reason, that people, maybe it's the price, maybe it's that get healthy thing, but the watches, they don't, what do they actually do?
Yeah.
And so, and if you want to use it as a watch, there's a big problem, which is that most of them need to be recharged a lot. And it's nice to not have to do that with a watch. You want to wear a watch and not have to plug it in every week or 4 days. Mm-hmm. I think if it overcame that, then maybe it would be more attractive.
Yeah, and let me jump in. I just took a look around the room, and this is the other thing about one again, right? Going back to one. I'm looking around the room. There's four of us right here. I can see two of us don't have watches, and I think that's the other thing. I stopped wearing a watch when I got a phone.
Right.
Because now my phone is my watch. And again, having a watch to me is like, that's crazy because I already have one. Why do I need two? I don't need to look at my phone and my wrist to tell the time. I have it on one device. So I look around my kitchen where I work. No one has a watch anymore.
No. Yeah. And that's another big hurdle. If it could do, I think about like when the iPhone launched, or sometimes like it's any new product that really succeeds. I feel like if it can do like three or four great things that you want to do with it. And that's like a big challenge with, if you're going to make one of these devices, like what are the three or four great things? Like the fitness stuff maybe is one great thing, or maybe it's not even that one thing for some people. And then you really have to come up with some more. And, you know, maybe a smartwatch, the best thing it can be right now is kind of an extra pager on your wrist. And that's really a debatable use. I find it useful sometimes in a noisy area, but if I wasn't testing these out, I don't know if I would have bought one.
Yeah, what a problem does it solve? I mean, technology has to solve a problem, and I don't know if that smartwatch solves a problem right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you end up with gigantic, you know, tablet phones in your bag that you don't want to take out, maybe the watch becomes something. But, you know, exactly, the way it is right now, it's you can't beat what a phone can offer, and that's the hurdle.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about drones. Chris has got a kind of Fit.
Yeah, I have S Health that came with my Samsung phone. So, I mean, again, the phone, you know, having a watch do it, but I have a phone that does it.
All right, we're going to talk about drones. I want to come back to the phablet discussion. If you don't know what that is, we're going to tell you. We're going to talk about net neutrality and all kinds of things. Scott Stein is here from CNET with Rich Hanley and Chris Prosperi, and we'll be right back. You can find what we talk about on the show online anytime at WNPR.org. Right now, you can see delicious, easy recipes for dinner, value wines, much more. Just go to foodschmooze.org, or you can search the Faith Middleton Show under programs at WNPR.org. Okay, Rich Hanley is here from Quinnipiac University, Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast, our techie, and Scott Stein from CNET, C-N-E-T, the online site for mobile computing, laptop reviews, tech culture in general. Can we come back to, if you don't know, phablets, that's the name where you merge a phone and a tablet. So it is what Scott was referring to. It's a supersize phone. You see people holding them up to their ears in that hilarious way where you watch Seinfeld and he's got that phone with the big antenna sticking out of it. It looks like that. So I have this theory, Scott and Chris and Rich, that this is like baggy jeans. You know, I mean, people put baggy jeans on once and said, "This is fantastic. I'm not taking these off." And so you give someone a phablet, a giant phone, and they think, "This is so easy to type. Look how beautiful things look on this, and yet I can still put it in my pocket." Mm-hmm. You know, does it look a little funny up to my ear if I'm not using some kind of an earphone piece? Yes, but so what? Nobody seems to care. My question is it, you know, all over Asia, they want even bigger phablets than they have right now that are 7 inches. If you could get a 10-inch phone like we've been talking about, they would get it, and so would I. So is this trend, Scott, do you think, or is this going to stick?
I think it's going to stick. And I think it's like what you said. What are we really using these for? You know, all of the nice-looking apps that are out there and the increasing power of the things that you can do on these phones demands a bigger screen. It's like, you know, Apple created that problem or need themselves by having a fantastic collection of apps, and you're getting to processors that are really, really powerful, you know, computer powerful. So, you know, in a world where that wasn't the case, then maybe, you know, with the original iPhone, then maybe you didn't need a screen that big. But now it's a real waste not to have it. And I think that that's what's really driving it. Maybe if it's about making a phone call, maybe that is where a watch comes in, or a headset, a more advanced headset, something you use to make phone calls, and you never, ever hold it to your face. You know, the era of holding the device to your face will have disappeared because it doesn't make sense anymore.
When is all this, you know, when? This stuff is always coming. It's like the genome is the answer to all diseases. It's always just around the corner. You know, when is somebody going to get smart? As great as computers are right now, it's still a little bit like the dark ages in areas where it shouldn't be. When does this happen?
I was just talking with someone here at CNET about it. Actually, with ZDNet, our another site here. And, you know, I think that there's one missing link in when this gets really smart. We talk about what we really need a computer for, and it's stuff like photo storage, and it's stuff like, storage. And where do you manage all of your stuff? The cloud is a mess, I think, because you don't know if you can trust one particular place, and you don't know if you can access it easily. You want what I really want is a kind of like a server. I want that super magic box that sits in my home, sucks up all of the data from all of the devices that I have, and then allows me to edit and access it. It's like a terminal. I mean, we can do this already with servers, and you can do this with remote hard drives. But why can't we, on a phone or a tablet or a laptop, basically share all that information easily in one place? If you could just have that thing, then you could work on an iPad all day long and be able to access all that data in your home and not worry about it.
Oh, this is the key to your fortune.
And we do have that. Like you said, I have a home server, and it's got to be a little techy, but I have a home server, and with the version of Microsoft Server I got, it came with an active IP address. So basically, I have my home server live online, and I can link my phone, laptop, work computer, all to one hard drive where I store copies of information and basically all my information that I'm working on. So that is kind of my cloud.
Exactly.
So it is kind of out there already. You just have to be a little more tech savvy to get it going.
You do. It's crazy, though, because I think that, you know, the average person, you know, I think about my mom or anyone else who's like saying, "I'm not necessarily tech savvy, but you're taking a ton of photos and videos, and you've no," and that's all these phones with their cameras are selling that use case. And nothing's really built on the back end. Apple doesn't really have any way to store this stuff. And you're left using iPhoto or other things, or Google has Google Plus, and they're also, I think, relatively strange. And you just think, oh, my goodness, just put this somewhere for us, make our lives easier, suck it all up, and organize it. Because really, to me, it's like the way iTunes used to be with music, but we don't worry about that anymore. You know, the photos need a vast overhaul. You know, you need to rethink. It's everything for us, photos and video, and it needs all the attention of the world to do that well.
That's so so right. interesting and smart, Scott. Scott, have you ever done a piece or reviewed drones? Because we're going to talk with Rich about this. He's using them.
No, I look at them once in a while, but really not that much. So it's fascinating to me, and it's a little scary. And I think it's growing much faster than people realize.
Well, we think of them mostly for military applications or for kids fooling around with little helicopters and stuff. But Rich, you're actually using them and
oh,
they're
yeah.
affordable relatively.
Right. I mean, it really, it's not the drone, but the fact that you can carry a stabilizer and a camera to give you very smooth video that you can control. You can really have expert control over the shot. Whereas before you had to get a helicopter with a gyro mount, and we're talking $700 for a couple of hours. Now you can get a drone for under $1,000, you know, with a gimbal, a stabilizer bar, a GoPro camera. Or there are some octocopters which allow you to take a heavier camera up. And you can get cinematic quality video at sunset to really inform your picture, your documentary, or just your
life. So you're using it for
a
documentary right
now. I use for documentary, and we train students, again, we have to comply with FAA rules about journalism and how to teach students that this is a tool that's not quite – able to be deployed because we're waiting for the FAA regulations on where it can fly. But over private property, say, in very controlled and limited and very limited in legal circumstances,
it goes without saying.
Yeah, and you could just see how it gives a different perspective of the world to folks who didn't have that capacity prior.
How do you send it up?
Oh, it's just a battery operated propeller driven little helicopter. Yeah. And it's very light, and you can
walk me through. You stick it on the ground and then start it up.
Then
you
start it up.
Yeah,
it's battery powered. Yeah, you stand it on a handheld device, which gives you a feed of from the camera, and you can control its.
And you see it rising.
You can go up, and you can control the angle by the monitor you have, and you got to have a couple of people just for safety. And it's wonderful. It's a wonderful filmmaking tool for folks, particularly working in the journalism side. But it's also good for a lot of practical uses for farmers and firefighters and so on, once the FAA gives clearance and comes up with firm regulations on public usage.
I have a friend who posts pictures on Facebook, and I texted him, and I was like, how did you take that picture? So he has one of these, and his kid is in Boy Scouts, and they had a camp out this past weekend, and I'm looking on his Facebook page, and they're actually in his backyard looking up at this device as it snaps pictures of him in his backyard.
It's perfectly clear. It's cinematic quality.
It's amazing.
Right. We put HD cameras on them. And, first it was the smaller GoPro, which is used in a lot of action sports and stuff, which is, by the way, another technological development, which has opened up vast territory for filmmakers and action sports enthusiasts to capture their activity in ways that we couldn't capture before, this miniaturization of high-definition video. It just gives a different perspective on the world, which is pretty much what art's all about. And so there are new art being formed every day through these technologies.
Where do people buy them?
Well, you can get them online, really. You can get some good – there's some good quality companies making some very innovative drones. But, again, there's FAA regulations. You cannot – you cannot encourage people to fly these in public areas.
Yeah, but doesn't it get scary too? Because as I'm looking at my friend's taking a picture of his backyard, how hard would it be to turn the camera if I was his next door neighbor?
Well, law enforcement.
And all of a sudden, you're spying on your neighbors.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Law enforcement's using these. Yeah, we're a total surveillance society, no doubt about that. Yeah. Not only through the technology we've discussed today, but also through things like drones. You could create a lot of mischief through these and create compromising situations, not only for yourself but for others. And that has to be used with care and caution and so on and so forth. So, but there's no getting the genie back in the bottle.
Scott and Rich and Chris, I'm trying to figure out, we had talked about a lot in our society about our use of drones in other countries, in military situations. And the question was, how long is it going to take some terrorist cells to get their hands on drones and make mischief? We haven't seen that so much of that. And if a drone is this easy to get, I wonder why that is.
It's easy to get it, but and it's easy to fly. But again, it's limited in range, in terms of it's limited in payload. It's limited in a lot of ways. You can put a camera on it because now with video technology and digital processing and whatnot, it's very light and it's easy to use a battery powered remote vehicle to lift and to turn and whatnot. It's much harder if you increase the payload, you require more lift, you require more power, which means more blades, more battery. And then you get into a sophistication that you just can't go to a store and buy.
The question is, I mean, I don't want to be in the idea giving business at this moment, but I can think of things to do with that drone that would be lightweight and very dangerous.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, you could probably do them already in other areas.
I mean, Scott, what do you think?
Well, I think that, I mean, this is outside my field, but I would say that previous to this, I think that it may be easier to deploy a person than a drone. I think some of the dangerous thing, you know, in terms of terrorist cells is this, you know, you know that a person will do what you ask, you know, to do if you're communicating, and that can be very, you know, you can have complete reliability, although you may get monitored. But a drone is still, you know, would you have full control? Would it work reliably? Also, they're very conspicuous for the most part. But I think we're approaching a point where, yeah, that could be a real concern if they get smaller, if they do more. You know, I you know, that sort of great age of robotics feels like it's on the horizon, you know, relatively soon. And that's going to bring a lot of different questions with other devices, too.
Yeah, and there are good things, too, right? Because there's companies out there doing these drones bringing wireless internet to places that would never have it. I mean, I guess with every bad thing you can do with a drone, there are tons of good things you could do with a drone.
I think what Scott says about the miniaturization of robots is really where the cutting edge of technology is. I mean, the stuff that the folks at MIT are doing, drones the size of insects, that have full HD video capability,
like,
and whatnot.
Stuff.
And this stuff exists. You know, just the way even you know, somewhat more familiar robotics work, where you have articulated arms and legs, and that really, really mimic human movement and human dexterity and getting around places. I mean, we're right there now with computer processing power. You know, so you know, potent to create these articulations that will make it hard, I think, for people to distinguish, you know, in terms of movement at least, between robotics and the fluidity of the human. So we have a lot going on in this area,
This is our Tech Cruise, and we are with Scott Stein, who's senior editor at CNET, and we are with Chris Brassberry in studio and Rich Hanley of Quinnipiac University. We're talking tech. Whether you are someone who just wants to be in the know and keep up with what's going on out there, or you love to think and talk about this stuff all the time, we're going to open the phones if you want to ask a question, make a comment. 203-776-9677. That's 203-776-WNPR. It's an easier way to remember. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hi, good afternoon.
Go ahead, Steve.
How are you?
We're fine, thanks.
Good,
go ahead.
Steve, how are you?
I'm doing good. I guess you guys are talking a little tech, and I think Chris Crestberry was interested in my little drone that I purchased a couple months ago.
The backyard drone person.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Steve, yeah, what are you doing with your drone?
Well, I tell you, I cover six states in New England, and so far, you know, I was out to Cape Cod. I did some filming of some lighthouses, Provincetown. I actually flew over the Sagamore Bridge. I don't know if that's completely legal or not. But,
no, but...
But it's for photography is the main purpose I bought this for. It's just something I've been eyeing for a long time, and technology has made it to almost anyone can fly this thing. Well, it uses GPS coordinates to keep you safe, and it's been it's a curiosity. I draw crowds wherever I go, and it's been a lot of fun. And I think Chris has seen some things on my Facebook page that's been caught.
Well,
Steve,
I'm curious about the stabilization of the camera. I'm thinking about this device going up and the winds being what they are. I mean, anything could happen. And so how does the picture stay stable?
Well, that's a great question. They have, two and three axis gimbals on the camera that stabilize. So if the actual, if the device is turning, the camera will stay still. It takes high resolution video, 1080p at 60 frames per second, and it takes 14-megapixel digital still pictures as well. So,
and are we talking about around $1,000?
More, yeah, a little more than that, actually.
Well, how much?
Well, this base unit right now is about $1,300.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Steve, thank you so much for calling.
Oh, you're welcome.
What an interesting thing. If you have tech questions or comments, 203-776-9677. How about you? We were talking about Apple earlier. You know, if they bump the phone up an inch in size, is that going to make a big difference to you? Would you just trade in your iPhone so fast to get that extra inch? Or, you know, do you feel like you want to switch over to a phone that's bigger? I'll tell you this, Scott Stein, isn't it interesting? Talk about product placement. I see those large format phones, cell phones, on being used by every single character on television right now. You know, I don't see an iPhone in the hands of any TV characters.
That's a really interesting point. Yeah, you know, there's been a shift. I mean, a lot of these phone manufacturers are very aggressive. You know, Samsung is definitely, you know, gets those products out there. But still, you know, there was a time, you're right, when the Apple products were a lot more prominent, and particularly phones. And now you're starting to see that shift, you know, big time. I think that there's also a question, if these phones are getting larger, then, you know, we look at what happens to the tablet. And there's been some stories about tablet sales dipping. The iPad didn't sell as many units as people had expected. And will that mean that could tablets be a fad? And are the phones going to sort of retake that territory? And that's a question we've been asking too. You know, I don't know. But I do think that tablets need to really become more like computers. And I think we're sort of like saying we're hitting that wall where we say, like, I really wanted to replace everything. Well, then go ahead and allow us to. And it's not quite there yet.
Yeah, standing ovation in this room.
Yeah.
All right. I want to talk about, can you make a phone call on a tablet? Is there a way to do that right now where it would be, you could really do it and it would, you know, your signal would be great. It would be as clear or better than a phone call. I'm dying to know this. We're going to take a quick break. Scott, stay where you are from CNET and we'll come right back to you. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, FaithWNPR. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. I'm with Scott Stein, senior editor at CNET, and he's by phone. And also we have Chris Prosperi and Rich Hanley. I suppose we could have done better than phone, Scott. That seems so old-fashioned that we're having a phone call with you. So is there a way, all of you, to make reliably, consistently, every time, make a phone call on a tablet? Is there something that I could use to do that, or that anyone could use? Scott, what do you think?
Well, you know, it's tough because I don't actually, and you call me because it's true, I don't really make phone calls from my tablet. But if I do, I tend to use, on the iOS side, I use FaceTime or use FaceTime with audio. And that's the funny thing is that, you know, Apple already built it in. So FaceTime audio, I don't think a lot of people are even aware is in iOS now. And it makes very crystal clear audio-only calls. And it will, you know, work. It'll work over a Wi-Fi network, and it's good. And what's nice is that people can reach you. It's not like Google Voice because, in the sense that, it's more tied to your contact. It's not tied to a phone number, but you know, if somebody's making an iPhone to iPad call, for instance, you know, they know how to reach you. It's attached to your contact, so it's like calling you. You know, they just get, your iPad will ring. And you can take the call. So that's my favorite way that I use. And I think it's a little bit of a secret skill, because not a lot of people know about the audio part. I prefer it to the video FaceTime.
Uh-huh. Yeah, very cool. There's so many different apps. I'm using one called Groove IP Lite. It's a free app on the Android and Apple market. And it basically takes so the way I use it is it takes my Google numbers and it routes them to my phone. Right. So or it actually to my phone or to my tablet or, like I said earlier, to my iTouch. So when I'm home, I can get my, let's just say I have one of my numbers that's on my Google thing is my personal work number. So that is one of my Google numbers. And when I'm home and not working in the restaurant and I want to take my business calls at home, I basically just bring up that app on my iTouch or a tablet, doesn't matter. And what I do is that whenever someone calls that 408 number, which is a local Simsbury number, it rings on my iTouch. And you cannot tell. It is crystal clear. And you think – the funny part, and this is the part I love, when you call it, you think you're reaching me at work. And I could be actually anywhere I have a Wi-Fi signal.
So I just want to say you're announcing to the world right now that
– oh, yeah, that I'm not working.
They
yeah,
can
no,
get
I'm at
you,
work right now.
No matter what, yeah, no matter no, where, no matter what,
of,
they can get
that's
you.
That's part of business now is sure. being able to be reached at all times.
That's so interesting. Here we got a phone call. Matt, hi, Faith Middleton and the gang. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to, you know, touch base on Android and how, you know, certain phones are being used as computers these days. I mean, I made the switch from an iPhone to a Nexus 4, and I've, you know, really seen the benefits. I mean, I've taken, you know, the way Android operates, I can save images. There's a lot of communication between Google Drive and apps such as PushBullet, where, you know, everything on my computer, everything on my phone is just pulled instantly, and I think it's only getting better.
Oh, absolutely. I think this the interconnected nature of all our devices is certainly there already. I mean, using Google Drive, which I use, just to store stuff, whatever machine I'm working on, my Android phone, my laptop, my desktop, and devices still to be invented. You know, everything just pushed to one place for storage. And I think, you know, what Scott was saying, like, maybe we can get that server in our house. But right now I use Google Drive or Dropbox mm-hmm. or some other cloud storage just so I can put everything and have access to everything from everything.
So do all of you, including Matt, think there are enough apps available to you?
Start with Matt.
Yeah.
You know, I think there can never be enough apps. I think when you look at the Android market, you see that anyone can upload an app. It may be good, it may be bad, but it's kind of out there for the people to vote, and that kind of freedom is absolutely wonderful for developers and only makes technology really move forward in the future.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Matt.
Thank you.
You know, I see apps as the 3-minute record of the 21st century. Back in, you know, the 60s and the 50s and whatnot, everyone was trying to get that big hit, get that 3-minute record out there and sell a million copies. Right now, instead of making 3-minute pop songs, people are writing apps and hoping that they're one of the 1,000 or 1,200 apps that cracks the 50,000 download mark.
So Scott Stein at CNET, how many apps are out there? Rich, were you estimating
about
a million?
Over a million, yeah. Yeah, and there's about 1,000 that actually have 50,000 or more downloads.
So out of a million, really, most people are using 1,000. This is like living on a house, no matter how big, you only live in 3 rooms.
Yeah, that and plus, or there's 500 channels and nothing's on, you know, and the television metaphor there, yeah.
I think it's a good analogy. It's frustrating. I think there's plenty of apps. What I really want to see are apps that work better together. And Google's the leading edge of that. You know, like the whole suite of apps that they've deployed on different platforms, and you can move around and be wherever you are and still be in the Google ecosystem. And that's where it all needs to go. You know, like the problem is standalone apps. They are like a single, you know, or they can become a one-hit wonder. You know, you start going through them and you say, I'm done. Knitting them together, you know, the challenge is if a company hasn't made all of their apps, then you end up with, you know, does that app want to play with this other app? And, you know, you have to wait for them to knit their services. And it gets frustrating. Twitter and Facebook led the way, I think, in terms of being more baked into phones. And Google is also setting up that infrastructural direction.
I'd like to see more apps on the Windows. I just switched to back to Android from a Windows phone. And one of the main reasons I switched was because every time I went to get an app on my Windows phone, it was to be coming or not available. And it was very frustrating. And I wondered why. Is there somewhere – do you know if there's something just lagging behind on the Windows market that they're just not getting the people to write the apps for it?
It's crazy. I think it's always a matter of how many users. You know, it's limited by users. It's platform size, and that's the whole thing. I was always amazed at how long it's taken for Windows 8 to get apps that run, you know, that run as dedicated apps. There's still a lot of apps I'm waiting for. You say, well, I can't believe this is Windows we're talking about.
Yeah.
Not even the phone side, but it's you know, It only goes to show how much I think the phone is driving the way for not just the apps, but for the next wave of computing.
Scott, what's coming next that is of real interest to everybody, do you think? What's next? What's the big thing?
The big thing. Oh, that's a good question. Well, wearable, which we've talked about forever, that I think has a lot of fad elements to it.
Yeah.
But I think that there are two interesting sub-directions that I'm intrigued by, that I'm looking for. I don't know if everyone's going to be interested in this. One is I still think health tech really has a long way to go, but is going to keep growing.
Mm.
Well beyond, you know, you look at Apple's event coming up, there's a lot of talk about them maybe launching a health app that's going to be a health hub. We'll see if that's going to be, you know, could it be great or could it be another app that, you know, they've had like Passbook last year or a couple of years ago that didn't really turn into all that much. Samsung has a health event coming up next week. Are they just grasping, you know, or are they going to come up with something? And Google seems like a big one. But you look at heart rate monitors, and there's a lot of interesting directions going there. Now, in terms of Google Glass and the head-mounted stuff, I think everyone's gotten pretty tired of Google Glass.
Where are they?
Yeah, exactly. And where are they? But I think it's interesting because, you know, you look at Glass, and I think maybe a little unspoken is the fact that lurking under it, there's been a lot of interesting apps and a lot of interesting glassware, as they call it, that runs on it. And so the definition of what that is on your face is kind of changing. I think it's going to be really interesting to start exploring. They're starting to get into more augmented reality, you know, applications, things that where what you see through the lens interacts with the world around you, which is something that glass doesn't even really do that much right now. But when you start getting there, the idea of some sort of magic lens that can transform your reality, that's still really fascinating, and I think is maybe where the most magic area of wearable.
I have a really good app for that, and it's an AG app. And what I do is that when I'm in New York City and I'm walking around, I can actually turn on this app, which activates my camera, and I can hold it up to a building. And if it's in this app, I can get exactly what the directory of that building and what's in there. So basically, if you had it in the glasses, so as you're looking around, you're getting the information. Augmented reality is pretty cool. We're actually starting to use it at the newspaper. We're working on using it at the newspaper where my column, which is a food column, you'll actually it comes with a photo. So if you hold your phone up to the picture, you'll actually – what we're trying to do is get an embedded video, and you'll actually see me making it.
I think one of the warnings to this is just the experience that fighter pilots had with heads-up displays in aircraft, you know, where the image of your instrument panel and targeting information is beamed out in front of you when you're flying the aircraft. Mm-hmm. And there's a point where there's too much information, and fighter pilots would turn it off because they were getting assaulted by all these information cues that took them away from their real main task, which was knocking down a target or evading a missile. And so there needs to be a point, a sweet spot with wearables, particularly with Google Glass-like devices, where you're not getting assaulted with information, using information only that you need at that moment. And that's still, I think, a long ways away to get the determination of what you want to see, when you want to see it.
I'm still not clear on this altered reality.
Augmented reality. Right.
Okay, so how would that work? How would reality be augmented by these wearing glasses?
So basically the whole idea of it, and it's out there now if you look at apps on your phone where you hold it up and you can look at the world around you and overlay it on the screen of what you see on the street, little landmarks will pop up, you know, based on where you are in GPS. It's like virtual reality is just the idea of, you know, you're literally putting on goggles and you're in another place. And augmented is the idea that you're looking at the real world, but things are popping up in that world with it. You know, invisible things that that pop up with your screen. So it's a mix of virtual type things that are around you. And it's easier said than done. You know, a lot of it right now is kind of a trick based on your location. It kind of pops up things that float but don't really match. But the dream, you know, and kind of a science fiction-y thing would be, you know, if you look at a, you know, you pick up a fruit in the store or you look at a plant in the wilderness and it tells you what it is.
Yeah.
And
it's really cool.
You know, yeah, if you could have pop-up information like that, or you see, it gets scary if you see somebody and then it tells you how you know them.
Yeah.
You know, but that's kind of a fantasy and a nightmare that people think about, which is still working itself out, you know. And there are facial recognition apps and software being developed already.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sort of next level thing that I think is intriguing about that.
Yeah, AG is definitely one of the future things. And again, I use it and I'm always, it's not perfect, but the cool thing I like about it is as you're using it, your imagination opens up to, like what you just said, all the different possibilities where this can go.
Brian Faith Middleton with Scott Stein, senior editor at CNET, Rich Hanley and Chris Pressberry. Go ahead.
Hey, Rich Hanley kind of stole my thunder with the story about the jet pilots thinking that there's too much information.
Well,
because to tell you the truth, Faith, I don't want to beat a rainy day on a sunny technological day, but it is bloody, a little bit tedious, this whole bloody thing of getting overwhelmed. And the poor guy can't have a day off without hearing from his restaurant, and it's ridiculous. I mean, isn't it too much? And you're going to hear about the newest thing all the time, and the tablet phones don't get phone calls properly. It's ridiculous.
Well, yeah. there's a lot to that caller's sensibility, in that there is a certain fatigue that I sense, an exhaustion on on technology, and I think it may be showing up in sales of certain products as we move forward through this year. There is a sense of fatigue, saying, and I would say it's best demonstrated by the new 4K or ultra high definition television sets.
Yeah,
the manufacturers are trying to create this new, you know, this new market after America just bought HD digital sets. Now they're saying, well, you got to junk those sets and get this ultra HD. And I've seen it. Yeah, it's different. It's clearer. But is it demonstrably clear where you have to go out and buy it? And I get a sense from talking to people that there's just a certain fatigue of settling in that may not be good news for technology companies and fits in perfectly with what that caller's sense of the world is.
You know, these incremental leaps are too small for me. But to talk about all this is so exciting to me, because I love the idea of human invention. You know, innovation. And so hearing about these things from you, Scott, and from Chris and Rich and our callers, I'm just absolutely fascinated by, you know, what's coming, what's here. I'm just fascinated.
Agreed.
I could talk for hours about what's wrong with it and why it's not better. But to talk, I can't believe.
Mind's at play.
Yeah.
And it's a fun new world. And you got to remember, we're one generation, the generations coming after us. Again, to us, maybe it's too much, but I have a 21-year-old, and she just loves this stuff. There's never enough. You could always have another app or another device telling you something.
I'm over here still. I'm still trying to be mindful. How do you do
we
that
need
again?
Some simplicity. We need some sense of zen balance.
Yeah. Hey, Scott. Scott Stein, senior editor at CNET. Thank you so much for being on the show. Rich Hanley, Quinnipiac University. Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast in Simsbury, Connecticut, one of our techie friends. As always, this show's about the richness of life, and you can find the books, people, great recipes, value wines right now at foodschmooze.org. Click on programs. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.